that we're very happy to be living with the devotees. We're sincerely feeling that happiness to be with the devotees. Another thing I can see, I could understand this last night, I was reading Vyasa Puja books, old Vyasa Puja books, the British Yatra they make every year for Srila Prabhupada, Vyasa Puja book, which is a very nice idea, very wonderful idea, and there are many nice offerings there. But one thing I noticed was that it was Shiva Maharaj's offering at the beginning, then Krishnadas Maharaj's offering. So they were put at the beginning because they're, after all, the sannyasis, GBC, and the leading devotees in the yatra. But then after that, everyone is just all mixed up. Bhakta Andy, and then Prabhupada disciple, 25 years in the movement, then Bhaktin Susan, another Prabhupada disciple. So just as if it's all the same. But it's not all the same. It's not that we think that, well, senior devotee, after all, they have their problems and they're chanting Hare Krishna, but I also chanting Hare Krishna. Basically, I'm just as good as everyone. You might be. It may be that even you're a new devotee and in some ways you are better than senior devotee. And often that's the fact because many of our senior devotees, they're married and they're working outside and they may not even be as strong in spiritual life as we would hope them to be. And usually the junior devotees, they're the ones that are running on the temples, doing a lot of the work. So we may think, well, why should I offer respect to this person? It's just, you know, it's just completely out of it. And, you know, I'm getting up every morning for Mangal Arati and doing my service. So he may be superficially better. Of course, we'll see you in 25 years, and then maybe we'll get a better idea if you're, how is your Krishna consciousness. But even if a senior is apparently not in such a strong position, still, that respect should be given. Actually, we don't know. Those who are practicing Krishna consciousness after many, many years, they do have a certain kind of depth which you may not be able to appreciate. And they do have knowledge. Almost all of the devotees who are still in this movement after so many years, they have much experience, they have much to offer, much guidance to give. But if we think, well, it's just another guy, just all the same, Haribol Prabhu, no obeisances, then we won't be able to... one thing is we won't be able to take advantage of their instruction. And another thing, it'll just make an impersonal atmosphere. It won't be very pleasing. That's a very... I've seen in Bangladesh, even the Muslims, that they're not even supposed to do this according to their culture. But they follow this because the Vedic culture is still very strong there, even among the Muslims. That an older person is coming, walking on the road, coming to their house, and all the people will come out, the young people of the house will come out, and in public, on the street, in the capital city of the country, where people are supposed to be modern and sophisticated, bow down and touch their feet. And this is in Muslim Bangladesh. So this is called culture. My very dear friend, Atmatattva Prabhu, who you may have seen in Mayapur, you may have heard some of his lectures. He's very popular. Lecture. He gives very good lectures. So his analysis is that in the Western countries, our devotees, generally they're very enthusiastic, they're very dedicated, they know the philosophy, and in many ways they're better than our Indian devotees. He can say these things because he's in an Indian body. So he can say. And anyway, he does. He has no... he's not constrained to say anything which he feels needs saying. But he says one thing that the Western devotees are missing is this culture. What is that? What is Vaishnava culture? He said, just this one thing if they could learn, then they would be the most perfect devotees. He was saying this. I'm seeing now in Bhaktivedanta Manor that they're giving courses in Vaishnava etiquette, which is very good. But the most basic point of etiquette, that we should bow down and offer obeisances to devotees. We're having Vaishnava, I don't know what they're going to teach, but I don't know what it is, maybe how to clean your backside after you pass stool or something like that. That's all part of Vaishnava etiquette. But the first thing is that when we see a devotee, especially a senior devotee, we should offer obeisances. And devotees offer obeisances mutually, but especially that that whole culture of offering respects to senior devotees, if that is there, then it creates a very nice atmosphere. Everyone becomes very happy. And if it's not there, then everyone may be very formal, yes sir, no sir, but no one's actually very happy. And our service is going on to Krishna, but we don't make much advancement because we're just in some kind of impersonal void. So Vaishnav society, if we're talking about Vaishnav culture, we're talking about establishing Vaishnav society. So in Vaishnav society, is not just all the same. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his servitors, and within the Vaishnav society there are distinctions, and it's just like in a family, the father and the children. The father, the children, that's there in Vedic culture too. I've seen in Indian families, high-class Indian families, the children, even they're grown up, they're married, they have their own children, but every morning they'll come before their parents and offer obeisances, and the parents will bless them, like this. So that creates a very nice atmosphere. Later in the day, I'll see the same son who is offering obeisances, he may be arguing with his father. His father may be saying something and arguing, but not argument like you'll have in these countries, cursing and using bad words, but some point, actually, I'm thinking of one specific instance, where they're talking about, because this Vaishnava family, about how to preach Krishna consciousness in this situation. So they had some disagreements, actually in Dubai, so they were thinking how far we can go in this Muslim country, how far we can take the limits. So there, he was putting his opinion, but ultimately the father, it's understood that they may, the son is also an intelligent young man, and the father, he's also intelligent, they're both dedicated to Krishna. And but they have different perspectives on preaching, but it's understood by both of them that even though the son is expressing his opinion, the father gives him that much room to do that, but ultimately there's no question, what the father says, that will go. And that is the system, that is Vedic culture, and everyone in that culture, they feel very satisfied in their dealings and protected, and the young people get the guidance that they need. Whereas if modern culture means, not culture, animal, lower than animal, that the parents, they kick the kids out on the street, get out, don't live with me anymore, look after yourself. And the children, they think they have a right to shout at the parents, yell at them, scream at them, and call them bad names, and never look after them in their old age. A completely heartless, selfish way of life. So of course our devotees, they don't exactly do that, but coming from this background, we should know that we have now come to Krishna consciousness. It's not just learning a philosophy. It's not just, even there are rules and regulations to follow, but it's a whole way of life. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is not exactly a religion, but it's a philosophical, scientific and cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire world. So if we have to go all of these things, philosophy you have to know. What is the science of Krishna consciousness? It means, what is the philosophy? Philosophical and scientific means we have to know the philosophy and we have to know how to put that into practice. But there's also the cultural aspect. Culture doesn't mean that we do some Bharatanatyam, some Indian dances. That's when Prabhupada said a cultural presentation, he didn't mean that. That is also part of Krishna consciousness. Art, drama, music, cooking, all these things. That's also part of Krishna consciousness. That's an important. When we say culture, that means these things. But it also means, if you look in the dictionary, you'll see one of the definitions of culture is the way of life of a people. And the culture of a people is based on the worldview that they adopt. Just like you'll find previously, the culture of the people in Ireland was based on a deep sense of faith in God. And now that, so there were certain things they did and certain things they didn't do, or certain things they did that they'd all go to church on Sunday, for instance. There are many other things also. But now, the secularism, materialism, that's made its way over here. Fully. So then there you'll also get people watching blue movies and taking all kinds of drugs, and the whole way of life is changing because what is the philosophy? It's based on Freudism, Darwinism, that there's no God in control. Asatyam apratishtamte jagadahuranishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. Demoniac philosophy. There's no God in control. The universe simply springs from chance. Therefore, when the body is finished, everything is finished. Voidism, impersonalism, this material, Darwin's, everything has come simply from chance combination of chemicals. So that when this atheistic philosophy becomes prominent, then people begin to be, atheism means demoniacism, demonism. So then people behave like demons and they don't care for each other. Someone may be dying on the street, someone may attack someone else on the street. No one cares for him. Let them die. They say, I was told in London just now that someone had an argument at the traffic light. Someone drove in front of someone else. So the man got out of it, the guy cut in front of him. So the guy gets out and stabs him to death in the traffic jam in front of so many people. And no one bothered, no one will even take his number, no one wants to get involved. Impersonalism. Someone is killed and no one wants to even get involved. So that impersonal kind of atmosphere, first thing, that means if this impersonal kind of atmosphere is there, first thing means we don't properly understand the philosophy. Because if we understand the philosophy, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we are all His parts and parcels. And we should be most grateful to live within the society of devotees and interact with devotees as devotees should interact. And even if there may be some difficulties among devotees in our dealings, the answer is not to adopt an impersonal stance. That means we've gone off-center, we've gone away from the proper philosophical understanding. The next point is that if we have such an attitude, then we can't properly advance in Krishna consciousness. Just like impersonalism, a man is killing another man on the street, no one goes to help him. Why? Because of impersonalism. Don't care, just look after myself. So the same thing, a devotee may be struggling in spiritual life. It's our duty to help them. Even if they don't come to us, we should come to them and give instruction. At least the atmosphere should be there that the person feels I can go to someone and reveal my mind in confidence. I can go for help, but if everyone's just yes sir, no sir, smile a little bit, then don't care for anybody, then that atmosphere won't be there. No one will make any proper advancement. So all these points should be considered. If someone comes to give instruction, we also shouldn't just ignore that, who is this person to tell me? I already know. Just like when we first went to India, this was in the 1970s, the standard response we got when we were preaching was, you don't have to tell me, I'm a born Hindu. I'm a Hindu and I know everything. And that was it. Closed. Finished. Nothing more to say. You don't know anything, I know everything. So if we have that kind of attitude that, all right, I'm already 3 days in this movement, I know everything, or I'm already 15 years in this movement and I know everything, then we don't have any opportunity to learn. We all need to learn. But if we're closed up, then no. Just, I know myself and Krishna and my guru also. All right, I'll allow him in the picture, just about. And everyone else, they're just not worth considering. Then this kind of atmosphere, Krishna won't be pleased, we won't be pleased, and no one else will be pleased. And when people come here, they may be impressed at first when they see all these things, deities. It's very impressive, it's very nice. But that atmosphere won't be there when people will join. Actually, we want our movement, so many people should join. There's such an atmosphere should be there that when people come, they're so much attracted. They're attracted to see the deities, take prasadam, or speak philosophy. They're trying to, but not just that, it's the whole mood of the devotees. How do we join? At least I know in my generation we joined because the mood of the devotees was so dynamic and so feeling and loving that we just, we want to be part of this. This is different to the material life where everyone is just formal. These people are not just formally living with each other, but they're dynamically engaged in Krishna's service. That when someone speaks to you, a devotee speaks to someone who's visiting, they feel so much attracted by this personality because this person is alive with Krishna consciousness and communicating that to others. So people are attracted to such personalities and to the atmosphere that is created when we're in that outgoing preaching mode. that we want to embrace the whole world. Everybody, come in. Come in. We'll give you prasad. We'll give you shelter. We'll give you guidance. We'll give you a path by which you can go back home, back to Godhead, back to Krishna. So if that kind of atmosphere is there, then people are going to join our movement. So many, that's how it should be. Actually, our movement should be that so many people are coming to join. And I'm sure in this country also that we can make a lot of devotees. We used to in the past, and we can do it again. But we have to have faith in, first of all, we have to have faith in Krishna, that people, they need to come to Krishna. We should have so much faith that we must, people we meet, bring them. We should bring them to Krishna. We should have faith that by bringing them to this movement, they will be eternally benefited. And we have to be ready also to take that trouble, bring people, preach to them. Don't just give them a plate of prasadam and that's finished. And then, just smile at them, be nice. Now, preaching means you may not even be nice. You may be very heavy. Many people joined our movement because the devotees preached to them so heavily and they argued with them. But they went away and their head was spinning and they thought, well, actually, that's right. I know many devotees have told me that. The first time they came to the devotees preached them so strongly and they couldn't tolerate. Why? Because they're impersonalists. They expect when you go to an ashram, the sadhu will smile at you. That's all. And they're shocked that to meet someone, and for the first time they meet someone, and so that person speaks to them so strongly. But then eventually they realize that this person is speaking to me strongly. Why? It means, why should he take the trouble to speak to me so strongly? Because he cares. He actually cares that I'm an impersonalist. He actually cares. He doesn't want me to insult Krishna. So yeah, they actually care for me. That's why. I know myself when I first came, big philosopher walked in the door, and they smashed me. You know, completely smashed. No, you're wrong. Look, you said I'm wrong? How can you say I'm wrong? People don't say that. You don't just meet people and they tell you you're all wrong and you're bogus and you're philosophers. You're all wrong, you don't know anything. It was heavy. But then, I asked, well, how do you say you're so right? You're telling me I'm... And then they gave their reasons. This is Shastra. This is realized knowledge presented by authorities. Those who are perfect authorities. Oh, yes. All right. Okay. All right. It's damn difficult to swallow, but intellectually I have to accept it. And not only intellectually, but the person who's doing it is not just out there to... But also there's prasadam. Come to the temple, dance, deities. So everything is there. We have the formula. We've got everything to give the misguided people of this world, and there are so many. Everyone is suffering. We have the solution. The solution is chant Hare Krishna and be happy. We've got it. We're so fortunate. All we have to do is to give that to others. People want this. I know in Ireland, especially, there are so many young people here, maybe young people, maybe older people also, who are, they're good candidates. They can come to Krishna consciousness. There's very, very good scope. People in modern age means people are suffering like anything. They put on a brave face, they're smiling. But inside, people are suffering. We know, because we are in the same position ourselves. And things haven't changed that much. The world is still going on. There are devotees and there are non-devotees. But so many of these non-devotees, they can become devotees. The scope is there. There's tremendous scope. So here we are, practicing Krishna consciousness here to set an example for others. But we also want to bring people in. We want... There are some problems we want to create in our temples. I would like to see one problem in this temple. I would like to see the problem that there's no space for all the devotees and there's a big line. Everyone has to get up early in the morning for passing and going to shower. And everyone's in such a hurry to go to Mangalarti, there's no time. So they run down to the lake and put a couple of buckets over them. This problem I'd like to see. It's a funny thing, actually. We seem to have two kinds of temples in our movement. One is totally overcrowded. There's like a tiny little space with so many devotees. And the other is big properties with no one in them. So, of course, this is like somewhere in between. And from that point of view, it's somewhat... It's not neither overcrowded nor totally empty. But let's make that problem. No space. No space. Not that we're going to turn... Sometimes The devotee said, no space, all right, you go away. No, no, anyone wants to come and join? Yeah, come on, there's no space, but anyway, we'll squeeze you in somewhere. Have you ever tried sleeping standing on your head? We can give you a space there, lad, if you like. But I know devotees, previously they used to join, even no facilities. That I think it was, who was telling me, one devotee was telling me, and he joined in Boston, in America, that the temple they had in a bad area, means bad area of town. So they used to get rocks through the window, and the windows naturally broke. And this happened a few times, and they couldn't afford to mend the windows all the time, so they just left them open. I saw that in Liverpool also, many of the houses, they just have corrugated iron over the windows because they can't afford to mend them every time they get a rock through them. So anyway, they didn't put corrugated iron, they just had it open in the winter. And devotees would wake up in the mornings with snow up against their sleeping bags. But they joined because they'd rather, and they're mostly from middle-class backgrounds, a very comfortable home. They can go to their father and mother and have a nice comfortable home with heating and whatever, but they'd rather live with the devotees. There's snow in the half inch between the sleeping bags. They're just all packed together. In London, or in Berry Place, that temple when I joined, if you came in after 10 o'clock at night, you couldn't get in because you couldn't open the door because every inch of space was covered with bodies. And you couldn't get them up either because once they were down, they were down. It's, you know, the stairs going up is just a small stairway. But sometimes, so where it goes around, there'd be the stair becomes bigger at one end. So some of our shorter devotees, they would sleep on that sometimes. And the brahmachari room was about, if you take this area here, not including the altar, about half the size of this. And at that time we had about 60 brahmacharis staying in the temple. There was one shower. So you were allowed approximately 5 seconds, maximum 8 seconds in the shower. And if you spent any more time, you'd be physically pulled out. So that's how it was. But devotees were in ecstasy, in bliss, because we were just going out on book distribution and Harinam. Prasad was wonderful. And it was just any devotee who was ever at that Berry Place temple, I know, is the most ecstatic temple. Devotees didn't care about the difficulties because they're just in complete ecstasy of chanting, dancing, taking usually far too much prasad, and distributing books. Deities were so beautiful, so merciful. I remember one devotee said to me that we were discussing how wonderful this temple is. This is a very senior devotee at that time, very learned. So he said, actually, it's all because of the temple president. I said, yeah. Town presidents, and everyone appreciated the town president, it was very nice. He said, I'm not talking about Vichachavirya Prabhu, although he's also wonderful, but the real town president here is Radha Nandanishwar. Because everyone is so much dedicated to them that everyone's simply thinking, whatever service I'm doing, let me do it for the pleasure of Radha Nandanishwar. That is personalism. Means that everyone's thinking, how can we all serve Nandanishwar? Because everyone is so much dedicated to them that everyone's simply thinking, whatever service I'm doing, let me do it for the pleasure of Radha Nandanishwar. That is personalism. Means that everyone's thinking, how can we all serve the deities very nicely? And such a nice atmosphere was created that anyone who walked in there, they didn't want to walk out again. And they walked into the temple and they're saying, hey, this is better than outside. I've been all over the world, so many different places, but this is something special. And it is, because it's not the material world. The temple is not the material world. It means the atmosphere of the spiritual world, that the people walk in. What is this? This is something wonderful, different. They immediately feel attracted, because the whole material world, it's only a false attraction. And those who are a little bit purified, when they enter the Vaikuntha atmosphere, then immediately their feelings of attraction for Krishna sprout up. So this is the atmosphere. And that atmosphere comes when we have the preaching mood. We're thinking, how can we bring people to Krishna? How can we make people devotees? If we're thinking like that all the time, how can we make people devotees? Then, automatically we come to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. Whereas if we're not thinking like that, then we tend to become a little dull. So preaching is the essence of this movement. And if that preaching mood is very strong, preaching, sincerely thinking how we can bring people to Krishna. There's another kind of preaching mood. Let me show. I'm the best preacher. Our temple is the best. Our zone is the best. So that may also be there. But if that is the predominant mood, then usually that turns into false egoism. And then leaders start pressing the devotees, pushing them just to show that I'm the best leader. We have to distribute more books. We have to open more temples. I have to show the other temple president. That competitive spirit may be there, but if it's taken out of focus, out of proportion, then we get the kind of situation which we did have in the past, where there was actually sometimes exploitation, misuse of devotees, but for the wrong motives, the preaching was going on. So, actually, that's not the preaching should go on, but with this mood, how we can bring people to Krishna, and that means leaders are also preaching to the devotees. They want to see that they are very happy in Krishna consciousness, that they're very satisfied in their service, that their consciousness is very clean. Therefore, the first preaching, charity begins at home, preaching among the devotees, and then going out all together to preach among the non-devotees to try and bring them to Krishna. So this kind of atmosphere, if that is set up, then everyone who comes into the atmosphere, they'll be overwhelmed with happiness. And we ourselves will be overwhelmed with happiness. We'll be dancing will come automatically. You don't have to think, oh, now it's time to dance. Okay, lift up my leg. Lift up this leg, put it down. Lift up the next one, put it down. You don't have to think. But automatically the atmosphere will be so ecstatic. Katagaranam, natyam gamanam. Just like in the spiritual world, talking is singing. Walking is dancing. So that is the atmosphere of our temples, where Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is recognized as such, the Supreme Person, and everyone serves Him with great personal feelings for Krishna, for His devotees, and for all living beings. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment, please?
There's a phrase in the last dinner, as you were describing Krishna, that sort of reminded me of what you were saying about all the devotees who are there for a long time, they have a certain relationship with Krishna. It's something about seeing.
That is bhavagrahi.
Yeah.
Means Krishna, he accepts the mood of the devotee. There's one shloka, I believe it's from Narada Pancharatra. Prabhupada used to sometimes quote this also, bhavagrahi. That's also one of Vishnu's names in the Vishnu Sahasrana. What is it that. Murkang vadati Vishnaya, Pandit vadati Vishnave. Then exactly how the next two lines go. Then it says, bhavagrahi janardana. Means that usually when there's, in Sanskrit grammar, when you say to someone or to something, at the end it becomes aya, just like om namo narayanaya, om namo padmanabhaya. So that means, I offer my obeisances to Narayana, I offer my obeisances to Padmanabha. So it would seem that if you're going to offer something to, you're going to say to Vishnu, you would say Vishnaya. But actually this is an irregular case, and the proper way to say is Vishnave. So a half-learned person, a fool, murkam, he may say Vishnaya. But an actually learned person, someone who's studied, he says Vishnave. So, but who are we talking about? We're offering obeisances to Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. So, bhavagrahi janat is not exactly what you say, but what is the mood of you saying it. That Lord Krishna accepts. Bhavagrahi. He accepts the mood of the devotee. So that's why we see, this actually brings us on to an important point, that if the mood of Krishna consciousness, personalism, is very strong, then even we may make so many technical faults. But Krishna is very pleased, and Prabhupada, he overlooked many, many technical faults. But if that mood is not always, unless there's a very strong sense of Krishna consciousness, then it's not always possible to maintain that very ebullient mood, ecstatic mood. Therefore, we have culture, which culture is like the net. The tightrope walker is walking. If he falls down, there's a net which catches you. It means you don't break your head. So if you can't come to the highest level, at least there's culture, there's rules and regulations. When you see a sannyasi, offer obeisances. Why is that rule and regulation there? Because at least that much culture will be there. When you see the deity, bow down. So that you don't become a complete offender. Some protocol is there. At least the structure is there. Of even if you don't have feeling, bow down. Even if you don't have feeling, that will automatically, by doing that, some feeling will be there. But if it's simply everything all the same, no bowing down, no offering respect, that is very much part of the Vedic culture. So if that's not there, even formally, even in formalities, then the feelings won't be possible. When you say love, before love comes respect. We're talking about love of Krishna. Love like the gopis, like father and mother of Krishna, like friends of Krishna. But that's all based on a service attitude towards Krishna. Understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first thing that comes, respect. Then, from respect, when that is reciprocated, then comes trust. Then on trust can be built up love. When we're talking about love of God, that's not such a cheap thing. It's not such an easy thing. We have to work for that. And the first thing is that among the devotees there will be proper atmosphere created. Any other question or comment, please? Please. There are so many interesting stories. A whole life is interesting for one who's interested. Everything we do. Every day we are chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Every day we have so much opportunity to make so much advancement in spiritual life by chanting Hare Krishna. But that depends, bhava grahi janadina. What is our bhava? What is our feeling? What is our attitude? We can chant formally, or we can chant with feeling. If we chant with feeling, then Krishna reciprocates. Every moment is an adventure. Every moment is a meaningful experience for one who takes to Krishna consciousness in with seriousness, with attention. It's not, of course, there are many nice stories of different devotees, the things they do, the people they meet. There's so many interesting things. But it's not that we're just living our lives and it's kind of boring, and then time to time we do a little preaching and it becomes exciting. But rather, every moment of a devotee's life is full of meaning. All right, so we'll finish there. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.